session number 25525, reel 3.
Richard Hughes, reel 3. You were talking about your job after the Nelson had been
modelled. When the flag came aboard, when we took the CNC on board, I say I had this job with the Admiral's Chief of Staff, he's a Rear Admiral. So I had a good, well, quite a number for a few months, really. But he's Rear Admiral Lamb.
What was that job about? What did it involve? What did you have to do?
All my clean his cabin and his bath and that kind of thing, proper domestic effort. See that his bed was made once he got out and all that kind of thing. So it's quite good. He was very nice, the old boy. In fact, I got to learn afterwards that when I got to move down, he was from Tame. they were all nice, and of course he had a chief steward to look after all his immediate ones, pressing his suits and all that kind of thing. But
was life on the Rodney very different in wartime to life in peacetime? What were the differences?
Oh well, it made a lot of difference. Because I mean, the peacetime thing, you could go and play. Well, all we used to play deck hockey and all that kind of thing, even during the wartime. But wartime, the ship's crew was moving around at different hours. You had the morning watch, and next day we had the forenoon, and the afternoon, and dogs, and then the middle. And of course, you were all shifted around. Sometimes you didn't see your mates because it worked out that way, but it was always some disturbance, especially to us. People getting in and out to the hammocks all parts of the night. And instead of having an alarm, you used to have individual shakes, your opposite number. That became very much routine, that before the end of the war, and what ship you were in.
What happened to the Rodney once war had been declared?
Well, I say we were in Scapa Flow at the time. We'd already come out of Pompey. But as I say, it caused a little bit of mystery. I was aboard the Drifter and we came back. And of course, I was a member of the ship's football team. And we had a game of football against the Searchlight Regiment in Portsmouth. So I was picked to play, it doesn't matter, although I was on the Drifter, I still played. And I dislocated my hip playing that football game. So that meant I had to go into hospital. I went to hospital to Hasler. I was there for about 10 days. And yes, I did. I got 10 days sick leave then as well off them. So the commander was there. He was very nice. The surgeon commander, he put it right. I was right as rain afterwards. But of course, I lost my village in the Drifter. I don't know whether I wanted to stay or not, but that's the way it happened. And of course, I went back into the old duties aboard the ship.
What happened to the ship after that?
I'm just thinking, I'm sure that's the time we went up back to Scapa. Well, it must have been, because that was early on, before the war started. No, when did I leave her? Well, we didn't go near the home port after that. I'm sure we didn't. Yes, we did. We went into Plymouth after having the radar put on. And then, of course, from there we went up to Scapa, and we were there for the declaration of war. And most of our time then was just going in to...
What were the Rodney's main duties once war had been declared? It doesn't matter if you can't remember exact dates, but what happened to you after the declaration of war?
Well, I say we sailed out and we came back. Then Nelly got her packet and they transferred us, and we kept the flag while she continued to get repaired. That was about 3-4 months. And most of the time was going out on sorties. One occasion, of course, was to go and escort the submarine spearfishing. She'd been damaged. So there was us and a few other ships that went to escort her in to make sure she got home all right, and she did. But really, the early part of the war was very monotonous. I mean, until they started landing troops in Norway and things like that. And we went out to cover those landings. And then we'd do a patrol down the North Sea there and watch him.
What were conditions like on board then? What was the weather like?
Well, the North Sea is never very kind to anybody, but it was all right, really, because night time, the days were long. That was the only snag up there on the Norwegian coast. And that's when the Germans started going to shore in there. They had aircraft to cover them. Of course, we took the front of that as well, the high-level bombing.
So you came under attack?
Yes, we had a hit there. One big 1,000-pound bomb landed on. Fortunately, it didn't do too much damage. I was all closed up on the pom-poms, then to my crew. And of course, as this bomb came down, it started chipping the corners off things. And of course, created a terrific amount. It was amazing, really. And of course, it landed in the galley flat, but didn't penetrate the armour. So we were very pleased about it, and it didn't go off. It just lifted out and chucked overboard. So it didn't do any physical damage at all to the boat. It went carried on and do what. I think we went back to Scapa and after that.
What do you remember of the Bismarck action?
That was weird. You were. We were in Greenock at the time, loading up with Duarte, and we took aboard a lot of invalids who were going across the States and Canada for medical treatment. So, I think we took about 500 of them aboard. So, and that's what we were heading for when the Bismarck eruption started. We sailed out, and of course, we had all these boys on board, and they had to stay on board, I'm afraid. We would try and catch up, or at least the skipper told us that he was trying to cut her off. Hood had already caught her packet.
Were you at action stations during this time?
Yes, indeed, yes. We were put to sea that day, we were at action stations.
What was that like? Were you at action stations all the time, or did you sleep at your station? How did you get the food?
When the situation warranted, and you were imminent, yes, you were at action stations all the time, and you had somebody who would go down to the galley, pick up a bucket of soup and bring it up, do it there, do it. So, do it.
How long were you at action stations?
Well, it wasn't. We closed up. In fact, we were in two watches, I think, initially for our approach. So that was the night of the 26th. We started doing close range watches. You see, it was a main armament engagement, so all the AEA people were donated to damage control, which meant that I was below decks. I had charge of the after party.
What did that mean? What was your role as damage control?
Well, if the ship got hit, we would try, and we used to have chippy chaps with us and all that kind of thing, and we were the lackeys doing the hunting for them. They would direct those, and fortunately didn't come to anything like that.
Where would you wait to act if necessary?
Well, we had carved what we call the after flat, which was the flat which contained the midshipmen and warrant officers' cabins, and we were situated down. There was a hatch there leading to the 6-inch director platform, and I'm afraid I sneaked one or two views of the action going on there.
Did you have any special clothing to wear? Or any special equipment?
You had your anti-flash gear on, yes. You always had that on. So whenever the buzzers went, that was very important. And your mask and you had. I seen it because I got up the ladder and had a look at it. Most of the book didn't see a thing. They heard the guns going off and knew there was something going on.
You were down below decks?
You were below decks, yes.
What was it like hearing the action?
She used to shake her. Of course, then we used to know that it was really going on in earnest, and the old ship did well.
How much were you aware of what was going on? How well informed were you kept?
I'm afraid you didn't know anything. It was just what you heard. Heard the guns going as you were having a go. And of course, the worse off the stokers and the engineers down below are even worse off than we were. I mean, there's a long way to come up there. And
So what did you see of the action?
Very little, really. So I've seen the only thing I see was what I nipped up the ladder for.
What did you actually see when you had a look up?
Not a lot. Because when I went up to have a look, I would see the flash of the guns. And it was just time for me to get out of the way. And of the actual action, well, there's not a lot, because I say the only time I used to nip up the ladder when it was quiet, as I say.
Did you see the Bismarck? Did you see the Bismarck?
Oh, I could see the Bismarck, oh indeed, as I say. Once I seen the flash of her guns, I got out the way. That was a good tell there she was firing. Well, she did start firing at us anyway. And I did see one or two of the anti-personnel shells fall a bit short of the ship. So there was a bit came over. And they hit the Corrin Tower, or the octopoidal.
Anything else you remember about the action that you saw or heard personally?
Well, yes, I remember it. You'll see mentioned in some of the documentaries here where the turrets were knocked out of action. And I actually seen those two turrets come down and fall down. I thought she was finished. They'd hit the director. Honestly, I'm not saying I know who it was, whether it was KG-5 or us, but definitely, apparently, it was established that the Rodney hit them. And we were a bit too far away, although we closed down to about 2,000 yards eventually. And,
so, once the firing had stopped, once Bismarck had stopped firing, did you have a look?
No, I don't think.
What do you
when the fire has ceased? I don't know who fired the last round, but I've seen the door steward going in to fire her torpedoes. And the skipper, or at least the information there, he was giving this information to the ship's company. And then we turned off.
Did you see the Bismarck go down?
No, she was still wallowing when we left. Indeed, I was.
Do you want to pause?
Yes. So, when we broke off, it must have been about 10 and a half past, I suppose. And CNC decided to pull us out and let the cruisers go in with the torpedoes. We didn't see much more of that. Actually, of course, we have heard about it since, and we headed for home.
What was the atmosphere like on board once the Bismarck had been...
Well, I'm afraid a load of us had the Hood in mind, as he was an old friend of ours. And I don't think there was over jubilation, but there was at the back of our minds, well, that's a good job done. I'd got one of her friends, and of course you were all annoyed about that. When we heard about it, it was really amazing, but I think that was to be decided between the hierarchy. But we turned off and started home. And on our way back, you could see, well, I suppose that's a good typical view of what we could see, because that was painted by somebody else where we left for home. But there were one or two things that were probably that got a bit of gall, was leaving fellow seamen in the water. But having said that, of course, when you realise that only three survived of the Hood, there was a balance there which we seemed to accept. All these things have been said afterward. Anyway, we were home, we was on our way home, and we'd been steamed about an hour, I suppose, and of course an aircraft came in sight on our starboard quarter, big Fokker Wolf. And I was closed up on my after pom-pom then, of course. We'd gone back to our naval action stations. And I told my lookout to report to the ADP that there was an aircraft in sight. We didn't know whether whose it was or what it was, but... when it all developed, it was a German Fokker Wolf. But nobody would tell us. We had that dumb period from the ADP. Obviously, they couldn't recognize it. And, of course, we had the system of recognition flares for the day, and they used to be painted on the gun so that everybody could see them. And I left it for Washington, so I told the lookout to report to the ADP and ask them for guidance. This is not in writing anywhere, by the way. It's just, although it has been referred to, the aircraft is sighted and last seen dipping down over the horizon. Well, I opened fire with my gun on that one. So this is information that I don't believe by anybody. But that. That's what happened there. We opened fire on it, and she, with a pom-pom, she was in close for a good range, and of course she did dip down over the horizon, but we hit her, not around. There's another thing. She didn't come back to worry us anyway. So we steamed home then for Greenock.
What happened to all the people on board who were going to the United States?
Oh, they were with us all the time. Oh, yes, they seen it all. In fact, there's one or two good stories about them going around. Ludie Kennedy's got one around it, but going up onto the bridge and watching it all there. He was an American or something. Anyway, they stayed on board. So we went back to Greenock, topped up with fuel and food and ammunition. I think we got 24 hours there. Then we sailed for Boston the next day, which we should have already been there by then, but it's due out. So we had loads of bits and pieces to be put on there, or something. They were all on the ship at the time. So,
how long were you in Boston?
In Boston, we got in there and, you know, we came out in about, well, say 3 months, 12 weeks, yeah. The man who had done the deck, all our four deck had been with the gunfire being such a low angle, shifted it all, and of course that had to be replaced. And there was one or two other things to be done as well that we were going there to get done anyway.
America wasn't at war at that stage. America hadn't entered the war at that stage.
No, they hadn't entered the war, no. There was, I must say, the people of Boston gave us a good welcome there. Very people from the old country kind of thing. But we had a good time there. I had the Tartfowers killing in charge of two, and we used to patrol the ship, every compartment in the ship, through the 4 hours, you didn't stop. And of course, ships took over. Whites were in there. We had no problem at all in Boston. They looked after us very well. Well, in fact, of course, the people were on the jetty waiting to find out what part of the old country you were from. See, you know, if there's anybody from anywhere, Liverpool, Manchester. So there was all kinds of. Okay, there. Okay. Now 12 weeks. What was need to be done was done. And we sailed out of there, of course. There was a lot of tears and Newark and cheers as well when we left there. Then we went down to Bermuda for a shakedown period, I would say. We had no problems. We went straight out to the Mediterranean from there to join the Met fleet.
And what were the Rodney's duties in the Mediterranean? What were you doing in the Mediterranean?
Well, they're escorting. The first job we had was an escort for a convoy going through, and we joined. I think Nelson was with us. Yes, Nelson was with us. And a lot of big ships there, in fact. Well, it was said that the Italian fleet were out, so they put big ships in there as well as the destroyers. We got that convoy through all right. It was an oldie mess. Wasn't it?
Did you come under fire? Were you attacked?
Well, the bombs, yes. Not under actual gunfire. Because word got out that the Italian fleet was at sea. So, of course, dispatched us from the Queen Elizabeth, and I think the King George the V, they dispatched us to chase him off. Well, of course, we never caught up, and they'd gone by the time we got there. We came back to the convoy. Of course, the big ships only used to take it up to the gap. That was the Pantelier Island, where it was narrow, and we used to come, we used to turn around and come back. And the Ark Royal was with us, and we did another convoy after that. Taking fighters to Malta, two aircraft carriers. I think it was the Furies in the afterworld. They had some Spitfires and other things on that we wanted to give to Malta to back up the faithful from charity. So we took them and asked them, we came back from there.
Was that an eventful convoy?
And
did that convoy get through?
Yes, now the aircraft, well, they flew the aircraft off, you see, that was quite an advantage. They didn't have to take the carriers through to the Goad area.
Richard Hughes, Reel 4. Any other